Welcome to the Back Ass Words Podcast. We are the Back Ass Words Boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, I am going to be continuing with part three of our JFK series on Lee Oswald. And I called him Lee Oswald because, once again, that is what the real conspiracy theorists call him. Not Lee Harvey Oswald, but Lee Oswald.
Interesting. I'm sure that we'll get into that tonight. But
it's
like
a little thing. I don't know why they do it. But, you know, it's like the whole Jack Kennedy thing.
Yeah, so that is interesting, though. And what I will say before we get into tonight's outline is that something I shared with Kyle before the show started. I'm so excited to be doing this series. I forgot what it was like to talk about conspiracies. It's been a long time since like JFK and Area 51 and all of those episodes that we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am so excited that we are continuing this train on JFK because, and I don't mean to spill the beans too much. I guess we can take this out if we want, but this is a biographical episode on Lee Oswald.
Yeah,
and so,
that's what I was about to say. We're going to get into the conspiracy next week. So I know you love that part of it, Arden, but it's not going to pop its head in too much this week.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right.
But guys, before we get into the biography, a little content warning. Tonight's episode is going to get into some topics that might be sensitive for some of our listeners. Telling the story of Lee Harvey Oswald means talking about death, and we will also have mentions of an attempted suicide. We care about our audience, and we want to make sure that you folks are as safe as possible while listening. So if tonight's episode does not work for you, we'll see you soon.
And this is your reminder to always take care of yourselves when consuming media. If you don't know what you're getting into, you might not know how you feel coming out the end of an hour-long podcast. So take care of yourselves, and we will see you soon.
As always, guys, our sources for this week, and as always, the first stop on the research train was our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
If you find yourself in the financial situation to do so, go ahead and throw them a few bucks. I'm sure they could use it.
Yeah, it's a good, I always forget to prepare one of these.
I forgot for 98 episodes. You're good.
It's a good pillowcasing deed.
Ooh, good one. I do believe that it was a philanthropic deed that you were thinking of, though.
I think you are correct on that, Kyle. I misspoke.
I used Wikipedia's pages on Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. I also used an article from Frontline PBS called 8 Things You May Not Know About Lee Harvey Oswald. I used an article from the Wilson Center called Center JFK Briefing Unveils New Evidence, Better, Deeper Sense of Soviet Unease with Oswald. I used an article from archives.gov titled Appendix 13, JFK Assassination Records from the National Archives. Amazing source, super meaty. And I also used an article from The Intercept called Lee Harvey Oswald, the CIA, and LSD, New Clues in Newly Declassified Documents.
Stop! Stop! You're joking! Oh my word, we love a good source in this house. I'm so sorry. I'm so excited.
The sources have little spoilers in them. It's so good.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So obviously, guys, we are not scholars, despite citing our sources. So we're probably going to get some things wrong. Like our fucking bits.
Like the bit, like what? I was trying to concoct something in my brain, but I think that you nailed it right there. We are going to do some things wrong, like that bit.
And we are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong. There's some Russian in this episode. I'm really sorry.
Absolutely fair, honestly.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards.
I'm looking at Kyle right now, and all I can see is a professor cap. I'm so excited. It's JFK Part 3. We're talking about Lee Oswald. Take us into it. We're ready.
Oswald was born on October 18th, 1939, in the old French hospital in New Orleans, Louisiana, to parents Robert Edward Lee Oswald Sr. and Marguerite Francise Clavier. Robert Oswald was President Theodore Roosevelt's third cousin and a distant cousin of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. And he served as a sergeant in the United States Army during World War I. 2 months before Lee was born, Robert died of a heart attack. So Lee never got to meet his biological father.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1944, Marguerite moved the family from New Orleans to Dallas, Texas. Oswald entered the first grade in 1945 and over the next 6 years attended several different schools in the Fort Worth areas throughout the sixth grade. Oswald took an IQ test in the fourth grade and scored 103. Obviously, there's a lot of problems with IQ tests, but there's still a measurement to be taken there.
Yeah, and especially for that time period, like, this is all that they really have to go off on. Like, that's significant.
Yeah, especially in the fourth grade. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's wild.
And I will say, he moved a lot. He went to a lot of different schools in this time. I didn't take the time to necessarily chronicle every single time he transferred schools because we would talk about it for 10 pages.
Yeah, I'm sure that we could do like a two-parter on Lee Harvey Oswald. But from what I understand, Kyle is not going to break a two. Kyle's not going to put a two-parter in a multi-part series the same way I did. That's what I'm to understand.
Not yet. Several people who knew Oswald as a youngster recalled him as introverted and moody. In fact, pretty much everyone who knew him as a youngster recalled him as introverted and moody, or some variation of those words.
All right. Good to know.
In August of 1952, when Oswald was 12 years old, his mother moved him to New York City, where they lived briefly with Oswald's half-brother named John. After an incident in which Oswald reportedly assaulted his mother and threatened John's wife with a pocket knife, Oswald and his mother were ordered to leave the home.
What? Wait, what?
Not the first behavioral issue that Oswald had, either.
Interesting. This introverted and moody kid is allegedly assaulting his... Reportedly, do you mean, like, this happened?
I mean, all the people there said it happened.
Okay, so, yeah, that's... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oswald attended seventh grade in the Bronx, New York, but was frequently absent, resulting in a mental evaluation at a juvenile reformatory. Dr. Renatus Hartogs, a reformatory psychiatrist, described Oswald as having a vivid fantasy life, turning around the topics of omnipotence and power, through which Oswald tried to compensate for his current shortcomings and frustrations. Hartogs concluded in his report, quote,
Lee has to be diagnosed as personality pattern disturbance with schizoid features and passive-aggressive tendencies. Lee has to be seen as an emotionally quite disturbed youngster who suffers under the impact of really existing emotional isolation and deprivation, lack of affection, absence of family life, and rejection by a self-involved and conflicted mother.
Quite a pot of soup he's got going there, huh?
Oh my God. We are hitting it so hard at the top. This is, I mean, that is a resounding conclusion to that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this doctor is like, really checked it out and was like.
I mean, obviously he's 12, 13 years old, and this is a psychiatrist in 1952. So, like, take it with a grain of salt for sure. I mean, but, right. Like, I think it's still worth putting on the scale when we're weighing Lee Harvey Oswald here.
Because, I mean, I guess I don't know what his life is like at home yet. Like, I don't know how his mom feels about him yet. But, like, it sounds like there's some conflict there. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too in the weeds here. Maybe I'm trying to be a psychiatrist a little too much. But I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Hartog suggested that Lee be placed on probation with the condition that he seek support and direction from a child guidance clinic and that Oswald seek psychotherapeutic guidance through contact with a family agency. While describing a rather pleasant, appealing quality about this emotionally starved, affectionless youngster, which grows as one speaks to him, Evelyn D. Siegel, who was a social worker that interviewed both Lee and Margaret Oswald at Youth House, which was a facility that helped at troubled youth.
Okay.
She observed that he had detached himself from the world around him because no one in it ever met any of his needs for love. Marguerite, according to Hartogs and Siegel, showed him very little attention, with Siegel determining that Lee, quote,
just felt that his mother never gave a damn for him. He always felt like a burden that she simply just had to tolerate.
It's a rough place to be, for sure.
That's hard. That sucks.
Yeah.
Like, that's someone else saying that about his mom.
Yeah.
Damn.
Oswald completed the 8th and 9th grades back in New Orleans. They had moved back after the incident with his half-brother and his wife.
Right.
The entire time he was there was plagued with truancy and grade issues. He entered the 10th grade in 1955, but quit school after just 1 month, shortly before his 16th birthday. After his birthday, he tried to enlist in the Marines, using a false affidavit from his mother, claiming that he was 17. This attempt failed, and according to his mother's testimony, Lee spent the next year reading and memorizing the Marine Manual, which he had obtained from Robert Jr., his brother, and was, quote,
living to when he was age 17 to join the Marines.
Every high school has that kid, though, right?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. Well, and I mean, he's not in high school anymore, yeah, I guess. Yeah. But like, yeah, my man went full tilt on becoming a Marine.
Anticipating that Lee would join the Marines as soon as he was 17, Miss Oswald moved in July of 1956 to Fort Worth, Texas. In September, okay. Lee enrolled in the 10th grade at Arlington Hearts High School, but again attended classes for only a couple of weeks. He dropped out of school on September 28th, and a few days later, he wrote the following letter to the Socialist Party of America, saying, quote,
dear sirs, I am 16 years of age and would like to know more information about your youth league. I would like to know if there is a branch in my area, how to join, etc. I am a Marxist and have been studying socialist principles for well over 15 months. I am very interested in your YPSL. Sincerely, Lee Oswald.
YPSL, standing for Young People's Socialist League. It's not known whether or not he ever heard anything back from the Socialist Party of America, but we know he sent the letter.
So he's 16 years old and he's sending this letter.
Mm-hmm. And he had been reading Marxist literature since he was 15 years old.
Becoming a Marine and a Marxist in tandem.
Interesting combo for sure.
Yeah, I mean.
Lee became 17 on October 18th and enlisted in the Marines on October the 24th.
Okay. All right. So he did end up joining the military at age 17 then.
He did.
He got to where he wanted to go, I guess.
Mm-hmm. On October 26th, 1956, just 2 days after enlisting, Lee Harvey Oswald reported for duty at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, California, where he was assigned to the 2nd Recruit Training Battalion. On October the 30th, he took a series of aptitude tests, on which he scored significantly above the Marine Corps average in reading and vocabulary, and significantly below the average in arithmetic and pattern analysis. His composite general classification score was 105, which was 2 points below average.
Okay, so he's right in the middle of the pack. He's doing fine.
Yeah. His primary training was in radar operation, which required a security clearance. A May 1957 document stated that he was granted final clearance to handle classified matter up to and including confidential after a careful check of local records had disclosed no derogatory data. His preference of duty was recorded as aircraft maintenance and repair, the duty assignment for which he was eventually recommended. So he was working on like aircraft maintenance and repair, specifically on their like radar and communication systems. And so he would hear a lot of technically classified data. So he had this security clearance at one point.
Very interesting, Kyle.
Yes, it is. While he was at San Diego, Oswald was trained in the use of the M1 rifle. His practice scores were not very good, But when his company fired for record, so the actual test, on December 21st, he scored 2 points above the score necessary to qualify as a sharpshooter on the marksman, sharpshooter, and expert scale. So right in the middle of the pack. Marks, people hear sharpshooter and think like, oh, he's an insane shot. Nah, he was like right in the middle.
All right.
And he actually scored only as a marksman when he retested again shortly before he left the Marines. So,
oh, okay.
So middle average, below average.
Yeah, he like scores there. He sunk down towards the end.
Yeah.
This is important to know.
Yeah. On July the 9th, he reported to the Marine Corps Air Station El Toro in California. There he met fellow Marine Carrie Thornley, who co-created Discordianism, which is a parody religious movement that worships the Greek goddess Eris. And Thornley wrote a book in 1962 titled The Idol Warriors, which was based on Lee Harvey Oswald. This holds the record as the only book ever written about Oswald before the Kennedy assassination. Just a little fun tidbit.
write a book about what? About who? About him? For what?
Sort of. He like based the main character in this book on Lee Oswald. And it's basically just a book about a bunch of Marines fucking around and drinking and fucking and getting high on a military base in
based on Lee Oswald, huh?
Yeah. Only book ever written about him before the assassination. So,
based on middle of the pack sharpshooter Lee Oswald, my friends. Excellent choice. Wow.
Oswald departed for Japan the following month, where he was assigned to Marine Air Control Squadron 1 at Naval Air Facility at Tsugi near Tokyo, Japan.
Okay.
However, after unintentionally shooting himself in the elbow with an unauthorized .22 caliber pistol, Oswald was court-martialed. He was court-martialed again for fighting with his sergeant that he believed he was responsible for his sentence in his shooting case.
This dude is all over the place. A literal fist fight
with his sergeant.
Oh my God.
He had his rank reduced from private first class to private and was imprisoned in a military prison for a short time. Oswald was subsequently disciplined for a third incident where he shot his gun into the jungle while on a nighttime guard duty in the Philippines.
What is he doing? What is this? Just
taking pot shots just for like the shit of it.
Is he still 17 or 18?
He would have been like 18 at this point. Yeah.
Dumbass kid. What are you doing?
Because of his slight build, Oswald was nicknamed Ozzy Rabbit after the cartoon character. But he was also called Oswaldkovich because of his pro-Soviet sentiments.
I see. They're ribbing him. That's funny. That's a good one.
That is a pretty fucking good one.
Oswaldkovich. You motherfucking socialist.
Hey, he was a Marxist.
Okay. Excuse me, Kyle. I'm kidding.
While Oswald was in the Marines, he tried to teach himself rudimentary Russian. It's very mixed on whether or not he was actually good at speaking Russian. His level at the time was rated as poor, but he fared rather reasonably for a Marine private at the time in reading and writing. On September 11th, 1959, he received a hardship discharge from active service, claiming that his mother needed care.
Claiming his mother needed care?
Yeah. Because Oswald traveled to the Soviet Union just before he turned 20 in October of 1959, just 1 month after receiving his hardship discharge.
Right.
He had taught himself that rudimentary Russian and saved roughly $1,500 of his salary, which would be about $13,000 in 2023.
That's pretty good.
Oswald spent 2 days with his mother in Fort Worth. Now, this movement here is interesting. This is one of the first little kind of sussy things that Oswald ever does in his life.
I mean, he's been violent to a lot of people, but yes.
Espionage-wise, I guess.
All right, I understand. I'm right here with you.
So Oswald spent those 2 days with his mother in Fort Worth, then embarked by ship on September 20th for New Orleans to Le Havre, France, and immediately traveled to the United Kingdom. He arrived in Southampton on October 9th and told officials that he had only $700, so half as much as he actually had, and planned to stay for only 1 week before proceeding to a school in Switzerland. But on that same day, he flew to Helsinki, where he checked in at the Hotel Torni in room 309. But then he moved to the Hotel Klaas Kuki in room 429.
No. No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many things right now that I am saving for later. Ah!
He was issued a Soviet visa on October 14th. Oswald left Helsinki by train the following day, the 15th, and crossed the Soviet border at Vainikkala and arrived in Moscow on October the 16th. His visa was only valid for 1 week and was due to expire on October the 21st. How you feeling, Arden?
Because
that's weird. That movement is fucking weird, dude.
I have so many feelings about this that is so conspiratorial. I am frustrated that all of this is happening. So, okay, this is what I'll say. This dominoes perfectly. You know what I mean? Too perfectly.
You couldn't write this shit. You couldn't write this shit, dude.
Exactly. This is all way too perfect, and it is sussing the fuck out of me right now. It is so weird that this is so perfect. That is what I will say. Oh,
well, again,
I'm so frustrated. I'm so frustrated.
Just you wait.
Ah,
because Oswald's visa was only set to last for 1 week, right?
Okay.
But almost immediately after arriving, Oswald informed his tourist guide of his desire to become a Soviet citizen. When asked by the various Soviet officials that he encountered, all of whom, by Oswald's account, found his wish incomprehensible, he said that he was a communist and gave what was described in his diary as vague answers about the great Soviet Union. On October the 21st, the day that his visa was due to expire, he was told that his citizenship application had been refused and that he had to leave the Soviet Union that evening.
Damn, they turned him away. They were like, nope, see ya.
Apparently distraught by this, Oswald inflicted a minor but bloody wound to his left wrist in his hotel bathroom soon before his tourist guide was due to arrive to escort him from the country, according to his diary, because he wished to kill himself in a way that would shock the tourist guide. This delayed Oswald's departure, naturally, and the Soviet Union kept him in a Moscow hospital under psychiatric observation for one more week until October 28, 1959. On October the 31st, Oswald appeared at the United States Embassy in Moscow and declared his desire to renounce his United States citizenship, saying, quote,
I have made up my mind. I'm through.
He told the U.S. Embassy interviewing officer Richard Edward Snyder that he had been a radar operator in the Marine Corps and that he had voluntarily stated to unnamed Soviet officials that as a Soviet citizen, he would make known to them such information concerning the Marine Corps and his specialty as he possessed. He intimated that he might know something of special interest.
Come on.
The thing I don't get is, why would you tell the dude at the U.S. Embassy that?
Yeah,
like, I'm going to go be a spy.
I want to go be a spy for the country I'm in right now against you folks. That's crazy. I know a lot of things. You know what I mean? I was a radar technician.
Yeah.
It just makes me think of that Kylo Ren skit from SNL where he has to be a radar technician for a day because he's undercover boss. Yeah.
That one's
a
good one.
What up, Matt?
These statements actually led Oswald's hardship/honorable military reserve discharge being changed to an undesirable discharge.
Damn. So, like, his mom didn't have any medical issues, I guess. It doesn't really sound like him and his mom got along.
No.
So he puts in for hardship, and then he just fucks off to the Soviet Union and is like, I really want to be a spy for you guys. I really want to be a spy for you guys. Please let me be a spy.
And the Soviets are basically like, nah, we're good.
This is weird.
But then he goes to the American embassy and is like, the Soviets said that I could be a spy. That's literally what happened here.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
And this story of the defection of a former U.S. Marine to the Soviet Union was actually reported by both the Associated Press and United Press International, which are two pretty damn big news organizations.
Yeah, and I don't mean to stop here, but like, did he actually successfully renounce his United States citizenship?
Yeah.
So
after their announcements, the Soviets basically were like, well, we kind of have to let you stay at this point.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because I was just about to say, like, sounds like he can't be in Russia or in the United States.
Yeah, the Soviets were basically like, fine, I guess, dude. Fuck.
You want it that bad, I guess. You know, sometimes when you want something, you just make it happen.
So Oswald had renounced his citizenship, and the Soviet Union was basically forced to accept his stay there. And Oswald thought that he was going to be able to, you know, tell his spy shit, and then they would essentially, like, reward him with, you know, a modest apartment and a car, and he would just get to, like, live out his life and, like, maybe be a writer and just, like, chill for the rest of his life.
I mean, he is 20 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. But despite his desire to attend Moscow State University, Oswald was transferred to Minsk, Belarus in January of 1960 to work as a lathe operator at the Gorznot Electronics Factory, which processed radios, televisions, and military space electronics.
Okay. Sounds cool.
I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
But, like, it was not at all what he thought his experience was going to be as a communist Soviet.
Yeah, no, I guess not.
Despite that, Oswald received a government-subsidized, fully furnished studio apartment in a prominent building, as well as an extra supplement to his factory income, allowing him to live fairly well by working-class Soviet standards. But he was constantly under surveillance. He would find bugs, in like literal like microphone bugs in his apartment. He wrote in his diary about people like following him in the street. He would, you know, hear his coworkers whispering about the conversations that he was having. It was kind of crazy. Like, he was under full surveillance.
Right. I mean, to like on the Soviet side, it's like this dude's acting pretty sussy. Like, why did you want to be here so bad? Like, you just got here. You know what I mean?
They were very confused by his eagerness. But Oswald wrote in his diary in January of 1961, quote,
I am starting to reconsider my desire about staying. The work is drab. The money I get has nowhere to be spent. No nightclubs or bowling alleys, no places of recreation except the trade union dances. I have had enough.
This is like 14 months in.
Dude, like he's like, I'm sick and tired of the United States. I've had enough. I'm done. And then he goes to the fucking Soviet Union.
These capitalist dogs. How dare they?
Then he's like, I hate it here. I've had enough. I love that he said, I have had enough twice. I love that. That's so funny. Dude, he is literally just a 20-year-old kid. Like, he has a baby brain right now.
I think he was 21 by this point.
He has a baby brain, regardless. He's a little kid who thinks that everything is going to go perfectly. And this is hilarious, dude. This is growing up. This is growing up.
Literally. Shortly after this, Oswald, who had never actually pulled the trigger on renouncing his United States citizenship,
oh my God,
wrote to the embassy of the United States in Moscow requesting the return of his American passport and proposing his return to the United States, on the stipulation that any charges against him would be dropped.
He's so demanding. He's such a diva.
Yeah, dude.
He's like, I want to come back, but I don't want to come back if you guys are going to like throw me in jail or something. Like, that's not really cool. I would much rather work at the aerospace factory in the Soviet Union than come back and go to jail in the United States of America. He's just like got his hands in his pockets, like kicking rocks. He's like, just let me come back, guys.
He really thinks he's the main character, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous. Lee Oswald met Marina Pervoska, born 1941, when she was a 19-year-old pharmacology student in March of 1961. They were married 6 weeks later. In June Oswald, the Oswald's first child, was born February 15th of 1962.
Whoa.
And on May 24th of 1962, Oswald and Marina applied to the United States Embassy in Moscow for paperwork allowing her to come to the United States. On June 1st, the embassy granted Oswald a $435.71 repatriation loan. Oswald, Marina, and their young daughter traveled to the United States, where they received less press attention than Oswald had anticipated. He literally thought that they were going to get off the plane and there was going to be like reporters waiting to ask him questions and like news cameras and flashing bulbs, like the whole nine, right?
I mean, I guess he was like, you know, big news and like the Associated Press and stuff like that. But yeah,
I mean, again, there were those two articles. Yeah.
But again, that main character syndrome you were just talking about, he thinks he's so important.
Yeah. The Oswalds moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area where Lee's mother and brother were currently living.
Mm-hmm.
The Oswalds also met a number of anti-communist Russian and East European emigrants in the neighborhood. According to Alexander Kleinliner, who testified before the Warren Commission, the Russian emigrants sympathized with Marina, but only tolerated Oswald, who they considered harsh and arrogant.
Interesting. So him and his wife is Russian, mm-hmm. moves to the United States, moves to Texas, and they run into a couple of anti-communist people who I imagine are going to be huge dicks to them because they're from Russia or something, right?
Well, they were also Russians. They were Russian expats who had moved to America. And then become anti-communists, right? They left because of the Communist Party to move to America.
I see. I see. Okay. So they're in the same boat.
Which is a big part of why they sympathized with Marina and just tolerated Oswald.
I see. Because they're like, Oswald, you're a baby. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You literally lived here. You literally lived in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, like literally, you just did what we did with extra steps. Like,
yeah, it was much harder for us to get here.
Yeah.
I see. I understand now. I misunderstood. I apologize to the audience for being a dumbass, which I have never claimed to be anything other than a dumbass.
Arden? Let's get into something that really blew your mind last week. Let's talk about it a little bit more here.
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
In March of 1963, Oswald used the alias A. Heidel to make a mail order purchase of a secondhand 6.5mm caliber Carcino rifle for $29.95.
What a deal.
I know. I mean, you can get them for about that much, accounting for inflation. I think it would be kind of cool to own that gun. I don't know, the fucking same model gun that killed Kennedy, you know? Possibly. Allegedly.
I will say this. It's a pretty gun. It's a cool gun.
It is a cool gun.
It's a real cool gun.
He also purchased a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson Model 10 revolver through the same method.
Damn. Mail order, huh? Mm-hmm. I'm getting my guns delivered.
The Warren Commission concluded that Oswald attempted to kill retired U.S. Major General Edwin Walker on April 10th, 1963, and Oswald fired the Carcino rifle at Walker through a window from less than 100 feet away as Walker sat on a desk in his Dallas home. The bullet struck the window frame, and Walker's only injuries were bullet fragments to the forearm. The United States House Select Committee on Assassinations stated that the evidence strongly suggested that Oswald carried out the shooting.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it, if I'm being honest with you.
But isn't it so interesting, Arden?
Isn't it?
That the man who hit a moving target from 300 feet away from a different elevation, square in the head, twice, missed a seated target at the same elevation from less than 100 feet away.
That is very interesting.
Isn't that interesting, Arden?
You're right. You know what? You're right about that one. You got me there,
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that weird?
I have to respect the chalkboard and the chalk and the professor cap. You are absolutely right,
Kyle.
That's
what I need in the background here. I need a chalkboard.
That's very interesting. That is fascinating, what you just brought up. That is interesting. Holy shit. We're not there yet. I guess we got to build to it a little, right?
Yeah. Although you can't say that Lee Oswald didn't have reason. See, General Walker was an outspoken anti-communist, segregationist, and member of the John Birch Society, a extremely racist group of people.
Okay, so fuck this guy.
Yes. In 1961, Walker had been relieved of his command of the 24th Division of the U.S. Army in West Germany for distributing right-wing literature to his troops. Walker's later actions in opposition to racial integration at the University of Mississippi led to his arrest on insurrection, seditious conspiracy, and other charges.
Insurrection?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. What is
he was temporarily held in a mental institution on orders from President Kennedy's brother, Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, but a grand jury declined to indict him.
Robert Kennedy just showed up. That's all I have to say. I'm so excited. He finally peeked his fucking head in.
We finally got him in. We're going to talk about him more later, for sure.
I know that. I'm just saying, like, oh my God, here he is. And he's the one who put this general, who was already relieved of his command, in a mental institution. Mm-hmm. That is significant. That's interesting. Ooh, boy, we're cooking.
Almost like they would have a reason to tie Lee Oswald into this case.
Almost like they would have a reason to tie Lee Oswald into this case. You're exactly right, Kyle. You couldn't have said it better.
But Marina Oswald did testify that her husband told her that he traveled by bus to General Walker's house and shot at Walker with his rifle. So,
what the fuck?
I mean,
what's happening? That's his wife. What's happening?
That's his wife, yeah. She said that Oswald considered Walker to be the leader of a fascist organization. And a note left for Oswald left for Marina on the night of the attempt told her what to do if he did not return and was found 10 days after the Kennedy assassination.
Okay, all right.
Some suspect that note a little bit, but...
Yeah, I mean, if it was found 10 days after the Kennedy assassination, I mean, we'll get into that. But I'm sorry, Lee. You still have a child brain. I'm sorry, dude. You don't get to shoot people. You just don't. You don't get to do that. And if you shoot at people, people are going to be upset that you shot at someone.
Dude, I mean, he did learn that lesson later, to be fair.
Okay. Do you think I'm playing around with you right now, Kyle? Do you think I'm messing? That's not cool. You can't do that. I'm sorry. He did.
Conveniently, before the Kennedy assassination, Dallas police had no suspects in the Walker shooting. But Oswald's involvement was suspected within hours of his arrest following the assassination. The Walker bullet was too damaged to run any conclusive ballistic studies on it, but neutron activation analysis later showed that it was, quote, extremely likely, unquote, that it was made by the same manufacturer and for the same rifle make as the two bullets that later struck Jack Kennedy.
Okay, I'm sorry. I really don't mean to stop, but how would they know that, given that the bullet literally exploded? How do you know that?
That's a really good question, Arden.
How do you know that?
It's almost like it's a pseudoscience.
You're right.
Not all ballistics is pseudoscience, but some of it absolutely is. So,
I mean,
George de Morenschildt, a CIA informant, testified that on April 14th, 1963, just before Easter Sunday, they were visiting the Oswalds at their new apartment. As Oswald's wife Marina was showing Jeanne, his wife, around the apartment, they discovered Oswald's rifle standing upright, leaning against the wall, inside of a closet. Jeanne told George that Oswald had a rifle, and George joked to Oswald, quote,
"Were you the one who took a pot shot at General Walker?"
When asked about Oswald's reaction to this question, George de Morenschildt told the Warren Commission that Oswald smiled at that.
Come on.
When George's wife, Jeanne, was asked about Oswald's reaction, she said that she didn't notice anything and continued that they started to laugh their heads off, that it was a big joke, big George's joke.
I mean, if you recall, Kyle, we had mentioned during our Susan Powell episode that people, because let me say something really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say something really quick, because it's going to mm-hmm. connect really nicely. What I'm noticing about Lee Oswald is that he is erratic. People think that he is fucking arrogant, and people think that he walks around with this big ass chip on his shoulder, right? He has the main character syndrome. He thinks he can do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's also very erratic. He's also very violent. You know what I mean? And yeah. Although Josh Powell from our Susan Powell episode was not as quote unquote violent as Lee Oswald is, I do think that there's an interesting connection here. Because do you remember during our Susan Powell episode when we talked about Josh
mm-hmm.
Watching like crime shows and being like, oh, I would be way better at murdering people and hiding the body.
That's
I would
right.
hide it.
Yeah.
I would hide it here and nobody would ever find it. I would hide it in this specific place in Utah or whatever. And it's like, it's just a little like you're
a little weird.
You're being fucking weird. And like you definitely, and that's a whole episode that you can listen to. It's just 2.5 hours long, right? It's a great episode. You should listen to it. But I'm getting that same vibe right now.
Yeah,
from
to be
Lee
like,
Oswald.
Did you shoot the general? And then he just smiles. He doesn't say anything. He just fucking.
Bleh. I don't like it. This is not good. It's not looking good for my man Lee, let me say.
Now, the CIA claims. You're
right.
Gonna trust a word that the fucking CIA says. They
right.
claim that they had no contact with Oswald prior to the assassination. This claim is undercut by the fact that George de Morenschildt, a CIA asset, became close friends with Oswald months before the assassination.
You're right.
That spring, he traveled to New York, Philadelphia, and Washington. According to documents found in the newly declassified assassination files, at the same time as de Morenschildt's trip, the CIA Domestic Operations Division ran a search on de Morenschildt for exact reasons unknown, according to two documents created by a CIA analyst included in the most recent declassification of JFK documents. Now, why would the CIA be looking into Lee Oswald's best friend?
I have a feeling about something. but I don't think that I can say it yet. I have a feeling, but I don't think I can say it yet.
The covert arm of the division was run at the time by E. Howard Hunt, a black ops specialist who confessed later in life to learning ahead of time of a conspiracy to assassinate John Fitzgerald Kennedy that involved high-level figures in the Central Intelligence Agency.
Oh, there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. Oh, God. Okay.
A declassified memo that referred to Gail Allen, a case officer with the CIA's Domestic Operations Division at the time, stated, quote,
"It is interesting that Allen's interest in De Morenschout coincided with the earlier portion of this trip, and the information would suggest that possibly Allen and De Morenschout were possibly in the same environment in Washington, D.C., circa the 26th of April in 1963. So they're in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, in the nation's capital, my friends, in case you forgot what Washington, D.C. is, my friends. I'm swimming in the sussy bacas right now, dude. All I see are sussy bacas. All around me are sussy bacas.
Well, we're getting, you know how we got to build to it? We're going to transfer to a different wall in the structure for a minute because we got a few load-bearing walls we got to build up before we can start putting down some of these next floors, right?
Right.
So Oswald returned to New Orleans on April 24th of 1963. Marina's friend, Ruth Payne, drove her by car from Dallas to join Oswald in New Orleans the following month. On May 26th, Oswald wrote to the New York City headquarters of the Pro-Fidel Castro Fair Play for Cuba Committee, proposing to rent a small office at his own expense for the purposes of forming a FPCC branch in New Orleans. 3 days later, the FPCC responded to Oswald's letter advising against opening a New Orleans office, at least not at the very beginning. In a follow-up letter, Oswald replied, "Against your advice, I have decided to take an office from the very beginning."
What? What is he doing? What is he doing? He doesn't give a fuck. He's like, "I want to do this. I'm going to do this."
Yeah, this is not the first time that he's been told, "No, don't do this." And then he was like, "I'm already doing it.
I'm already doing it. I already started. I just wanted to ask, I guess, you know, to be nice."
On August 9th, Oswald turned up in downtown New Orleans handing out pro-Castro leaflets. Oswald was confronted, claiming that he was tipped off about Oswald's leafleting by a friend. A scuffle ensued, and Oswald, another pro-Castro protester, and two of their friends were arrested for disturbing the peace. Prior to leaving the police station, Oswald requested to speak with an FBI agent.
Where does he get off making these demands? He's like, no. Not you. Get me an FBI agent right now. He is a Karen. Oh, my God.
Yes.
He is a government Karen. He's like, you get me the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I'm not dealing with this municipality or these counties or these states. Uh-uh.
He would definitely be like a sovereign citizen in 2023 for sure.
Oh my God. The gall of this young man astounds me.
Well, Oswald did get to speak with an FBI agent.
Okay.
And wow. He told this agent that he was a member of the New Orleans branch of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which he claimed had 35 members and was led by a J. Heidel.
Okay.
In fact, Oswald was the branch's only member, and it had never been chartered by the national organization.
He is the Minority Association from Toynbee Tiles. I see.
Yes.
Very similar.
Oswald arrived in Mexico City on September the 27th, where he applied for a transit visa at the Cuban consulate, claiming that he wanted to visit Cuba on his way to the Soviet Union.
What is he doing? I'm sorry.
It gets a little weird here. It gets a little weird here. Just follow, follow with me for a minute.
All right, yeah. I'm right here.
The Cuban consular officials insisted that Oswald would need Soviet approval for this visa, but he was unable to get prompt cooperation from the Soviet consulate. CIA documents note that Oswald spoke terrible, hardly recognizable Russian during his meetings with both the Cuban and Soviet officials. But he had lived in the Soviet Union for 16 months and had a Soviet wife. Like, his Russian was okay at this point.
It had to have been. There's no way.
After 5 days of shuttling between the two consulates, which included a heated argument with an official at the Cuban consulate, impassioned pleas to KGB agents, and at least a little bit of CIA scrutiny on his movements, Oswald was told by a Cuban consular official that he was disinclined to approve the visa, saying, quote,
"A person like Oswald, in place of aiding the Cuban revolution, was doing it harm."
He was literally like, "You are doing more harm than good. We don't want your help. Please stop.
Please close down your office that we told you not to open in New Orleans. Please."
Later on the 18th of October, the Cuban embassy did approve the visa, but by this time, Oswald was back in the United States and had given up on his plans to visit Cuba and the Soviet Union altogether.
The first time I've seen him give up, honestly.
Still, though, 11 days before the assassination of President Kennedy, Oswald wrote to the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C., saying, quote,
"Had I been able to reach the Soviet embassy in Havana as planned, the embassy there would have had time to complete our business."
What do you think their business was, Arden?
What's the business?
Why did he have business at the Soviet embassy 11 days before the assassination?
What kind of business do you have 11 days before the Kennedy assassination?
Very interesting.
An interesting question. I smell CIA bullshit.
Well, some other people did too, Arden. Because while the Warren Commission did conclude that Oswald had indeed visited Mexico City and the Cuban and Soviet consulates, questions regarding whether or not someone posing as Oswald had appeared at the embassies were serious enough to be investigated by the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And later, the committee did agree with the Warren Commission that Oswald had visited Mexico City and concluded that the majority of evidence tends to indicate that Oswald visited the consulates, but the community could not rule out the possibility that somebody else had used his name in visiting the consulates.
Okay. Hold on. Hold on just a goddamn minute, okay? So we know that he went to Mexico City. He went there.
Yes.
Did not?
Probably.
Probably. And he wasn't allowed to go to Cuba and the Soviet Union. Was not
definitely
allowed, right?
And while so, he was there. Because again, Cuba did approve the visa after he had had to leave.
Right. And then the Warren, so the Warren Commission says that he went to Mexico City and the Cuban and Soviet consulates.
Yes, but at the time, because again, conspiracies started popping up about this day one, right? This isn't a 20 years down the line, people started to question it. Day one, people had questions and the data wasn't lining up, right? And right. One of the things that people started talking about was maybe it was somebody posing as Oswald that went to these meetings. And the public outcry got serious enough that the House Select Committee, when they were re-looking over this evidence, had to investigate that. And while they did say that most of the evidence said that it probably was Oswald, they couldn't say that it definitely was Oswald.
Yeah, I really like in the quote that you read, because the majority of evidence tends to indicate. Mm-hmm. That's very that wording interesting is wording.
Very important.
Yes. That's a whole conspiracy right there. That's a 10-part mm-hmm. series right there, dude. You know what I mean?
According to a CIA document that was released in 2017, because we are still getting documents released about this shit.
Right.
It is possible that Oswald was trying to get the necessary documents from the embassies to make a quick escape to the Soviet Union after the assassination. Again,
okay.
CIA document.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
On October 2nd, 1963, Oswald left Mexico City by bus and arrived in Dallas the next day. Ruth Payne said that her neighbor told her on October 14th about a job opening at the Texas School Book Depository.
Ah!
Miss Payne informed Oswald, who was interviewed at the depository and was hired there on the 16th of October, at a $1.25 an hour minimum wage order filler. Roy S. Truly, Oswald's supervisor, said that Oswald, quote,
did a good day's work and was an above average employee.
And another interesting thing of note is that he was hired on the same day as another guy, and there were two different locations where they needed people, and Roy S. Truly, literally on a coin flip, decided to assign Oswald to work at the depository.
That is wild.
So
I do remember hearing about that. That is crazy.
As far as the conspiracy side of things goes, that is definitely a wrench in the plan there, you know.
It really is. And
he was hired here just shy of a month before the assassination, you know, or just over a month before the assassination, you know.
Well, you know, Kyle, they just say that it was a coin flip, you know. You don't actually know. You know, what do you know?
Right. Yeah, the CIA got to Roy S. Truly, for sure. On November 21st, 1963, Oswald requested an unusual midweek ride back to Irving, Texas, claiming that he needed to pick up some curtain rods. He returned to Dallas with his co-worker, Donald Frazier, the next morning, the day of the assassination. He left $170 and his wedding band on his desk, but returned with a huge paper bag. According to Frazier, Oswald informed him that the bag contained curtain rods.
Oh my God. My mom's sick. I'm getting curtain rods. What is this guy doing? I don't understand.
The Warren Commission decided that the curtain rods bag really contained the weapon that Oswald intended to employ in the assassination.
How big of a bag are we talking to put that whole goddamn
big,
like a whole goddamn rifle in there?
Big enough to hold some curtain rods, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
Also, I'm transporting curtain rods and a paper bag is my transportation method. Weird, you know?
Yeah.
One of Oswald's co-workers, Charles Givens, testified to the commission that he last saw Oswald on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository at approximately 11:55 a.m., 35 minutes before the motorcade entered Dealey Plaza. The commission report stated that Oswald was not seen again until after the shooting.
Right.
But in an FBI report taken the day after the assassination, Givens said that the encounter took place at 11:30 a.m., a full hour before, and that he saw Oswald reading a newspaper in a first-floor break room at 11:50 a.m., a full 20 minutes later.
Right.
William Shelley, a foreman at the depository, also testified that he saw Oswald near the telephone on the first floor between 11:45 and 11:50 a.m. Janitor Eddie Piper also testified that he spoke to Oswald on the first floor at 12 o'clock noon. Another co-worker, Bonnie Ray Williams, was eating his lunch on the sixth floor of the depository and was there until at least 12:10 p.m. He said that during that time, he did not see Oswald or another person at all on the sixth floor and thought that he was the only person up there. He did also say that some boxes in the southeast corner may have prevented him from seeing deep into the sniper's nest. So the assassin could have already been in place, just sitting quietly.
And like, for you folks who don't know, the Book Depository is such an like essential part of the JFK conversation. And this is where it gets really, really weird, because I'm sure that you are noticing already that so many different people are saying so many different things all at the same time. It is very, very hard once we reach this point in the story. It is so hard to discern what actually happened.
Yeah, things get fuzzy from here on out, for
sure. Correct. And like, we're not getting into like the super big conspiracy side of it quite yet. But I do want to stress to our listeners that this information is very, very important. And I want you to take everything that Kyle is saying into consideration, because it plays such a huge part in what we're going to talk about in these later episodes.
Yeah. According to the investigations, after the shooting, Oswald covered the rifle with boxes and descended via the rear stairwell. About 90 seconds after the shots sounded, he was encountered in the second floor lunchroom by Dallas police officer Marion L. Baker, who was with Oswald's supervisor, Roy Truly. Baker let Oswald pass after Truly identified him as an employee. Man, if it was Oswald, can you imagine how that cop feels
today? Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Bro, that is wild. They let him get away.
Baker later stated that Oswald did not seem nervous or out of breath at all. But Truly stated that Oswald did look startled when Baker pointed his gun directly at him.
I would be startled,
fucking
too.
Fucking naturally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
At about 12:40 p.m., 10 minutes after the shooting, Oswald boarded a city bus, and probably due to the heavy traffic, he requested a transfer from the driver and got off two blocks later.
He's like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah. Oswald then took a taxi to his rooming house at 1026 North Beckley Avenue and entered through the front door at about 1 o'clock. According to his housekeeper, Earlene Roberts, Oswald immediately went to his room, walking pretty fast. Roberts stated that Oswald left very few minutes later, zipping up his jacket that he was not wearing when he entered earlier. As Oswald left, Roberts looked out of the window of her house and last saw him standing at the northbound Beckley Avenue bus stop in front of the house.
Okay, that's very strange behavior. That's so fucking weird.
Yeah. The Warren Commission concluded that at approximately 1:15 p.m., Dallas patrolman J.D. Tippett drove up in his patrol car alongside Oswald, presumably because Oswald resembled the broadcast description of the man seen by witness Howard Brennan firing shots at Kennedy's motorcade.
Right.
He encountered Oswald near the corner of East 10th Street and North Patton Avenue. This location is about 9/10 of a mile southeast of Oswald's rooming house, a distance that the Warren Commission concluded Oswald could have easily walked in the time. Tippett pulled alongside Oswald and apparently exchanged some words with him through the right front or vent window, the little smoking window that old cars used to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after 1:15 p.m., Tippett exited his car. Oswald immediately fired his pistol and killed the policeman with four shots. Numerous witnesses heard the shots and saw Oswald flee the scene holding a revolver. Nine people positively identified him as the man who shot Tippett and fled. Four cartridge cases were found at the scene and were identified by expert witnesses before the Warren Commission and the House Select Committee as having been fired from the revolver, which was later found in Oswald's possession, excluding any other weapon, which doesn't happen in ballistics.
Yeah, and maybe I'll take this out, but like, if you ask me, like, I know that he killed this guy. And like,
yeah,
it's really,
but there's still some weird shit about it.
Yes.
Oswald did it for sure.
Yeah.
Like that's not the question, but like, it's a little weird.
It is a little weird. I find this part of the story to be like, it's not out of character given everything that you've taken us through in this outline, but like I do find this to be like exceptionally cruel from him. Yeah. And I do, it's not out of character. It's just very extreme to me.
And it feels like it doesn't fit with this whole conspiracy that was so perfectly constructed and executed.
Yeah.
To then just kind of randomly murder a cop while you're escaping.
After you just shot the president in the head. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, I know that you're a communist, I get, or a Marxist or whatever, right? But like,
but
yeah, it's just, if it's weird to me. I don't like this part of the story. It is just, it's so cruel.
Yeah. Shoe store manager Johnny Brewer testified that he saw Oswald ducking into the entrance alcove of his store. Suspicious of this activity, Brewer watched Oswald continue up the street and slip without paying into the nearby Texas Theater, where the film War is Hell was playing. He alerted the theater's ticket clerk, who telephoned the police. As the police arrived, the house lights were brought up, and Brewer pointed out Oswald sitting near the rear of the theater. Police officer Nick McDonald testified that he was the first person to reach Oswald, and that Oswald seemed ready to surrender, saying, quote,
"Well, it's all over now."
McDonald said, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so, pal. Yeah.
McDonald said that Oswald pulled out a pistol tucked into the front of his pants, then pointed the pistol at him and pulled the trigger.
Oh my God.
McDonald stated that the pistol didn't fire because the hammer came down between on the webbing between the thumb and index finger of Oswald's hand, or excuse me, of McDonald's hand as he grabbed for the pistol. So he was like reaching for it as Oswald pulled the trigger, and like the little, his finger crotch saved his life.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's a pinch though. Ow.
Oh, you know that hurt for like a full week. You got that little blood blister there, you know? Ooh.
Owie, 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 dude.
Owie, owie, ow, for sure.
That's a saw trap right there. It's just, dude, hitting all of those.
That's my least favorite saw trap.
Yeah, exactly.
McDonald also stated that Oswald struck him, but that he struck back and Oswald was disarmed. As he was led from the theater, Oswald shouted that he was a victim of police brutality.
Okay.
Oswald was formally arraigned for the murder of Officer Tippett at 7:10 p.m.
Yeah. As you should be. Yeah, like, this is crazy. Like, he's murdering people in cold blood right now. I get that he might be stressed, right? And that might be... No. I don't get... What I'm saying is that...
No, yeah, he's in a stressful situation.
He might be in a heightened state, which is why he's like acting more erratically than normal, right, is what I'm trying to say, right? But it's crazy. Like, he's just trying to shoot everybody. He's like, get away from me. I'm going to shoot you.
Soon after his arrest, Oswald encountered reporters in the hallway of the police station. Oswald declared rather famously, quote,
"I didn't shoot anybody. They've taken me in because of the fact that I lived in the Soviet Union. I'm just a patsy."
Later, at an arranged press meeting, a reporter asked, "Did you kill the president?" And Oswald, who by that time had been advised of the charge of murdering Tippett, but had not yet been arraigned in Kennedy's death, answered, quote,
"No, I have not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about it was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question."
As he was led from the room, the question was called out, "What did you do in Russia?" and "How did you hurt your eye?" Oswald answered, quote,
"A policeman hit me." He just tried to kill two cops, and then he says a policeman hit him and gave him that injury. I mean, he seems to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
With the police or something.
By 1:30 a.m. the next morning, he was charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
Huh. Okay. I mean, I guess there is like a bunch of circumstantial evidence that like would lead them to believe, right?
They hadn't necessarily found all of that by 1:30 a.m., though.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true, huh? That is pretty fucking fast.
Yeah. On Sunday, November 24th, detectives were escorting Oswald through the basement of the Dallas Police Headquarters towards an armored car that was to take him from the city jail, located on the fourth floor of police headquarters, to the nearby county jail. At 11:21 a.m., Dallas nightclub operator Jack Ruby approached Oswald from the side of the crowd and shot him once in the abdomen at close range.
Mm-hmm.
As the shot rang out, a police detective recognized Ruby and exclaimed, quote,
"Jack, you son of a bitch!"
The crowd outside the headquarters applauded when they heard that Oswald had been shot.
I mean, yeah. I mean, America's favorite president just got, you know, obliterated.
Yeah. An unconscious Oswald was taken by ambulance to Parkland Memorial Hospital, the same hospital and the same room that Kennedy was pronounced dead in 2 days earlier. Oswald died at 1:07 p.m. Some critics have not accepted the conclusions of the Warren Commission and have proposed several other theories, such as that Oswald had conspired with others or was not even involved at all and was completely framed. A Gallup poll taken in mid-November of 2013 showed 61% of people believed that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was killed as the result of conspiracy, and only 30% thought that Oswald acted alone.
And this is in 2013. This is pre-COVID. So,
and pre a lot of documents released. We had documents released in 2017 and in 2022 that revealed a significant amount of information.
Right. So the fact that that many people are saying that in 2013 is extremely significant, in my view, at least.
Obviously, Oswald was never prosecuted because he was murdered just 2 days after the assassination.
Right.
In March of 1967, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison arrested and charged New Orleans businessman Clay Shaw with conspiring to assassinate President Kennedy with the help of Oswald, David Ferry, and others. Garrison believed that the men were a part of an arms smuggling ring supplying weapons to the anti-Castro Cubans in a conspiracy with elements of the CIA to kill Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
The trial of Clay Shaw began in 1969 in Orleans Parish Criminal Court, and the jury acquitted Shaw.
Huh. Interesting.
He's the only person to ever be officially charged and prosecuted in the assassination of Kennedy. Several films have actually fictionalized a trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, depicting what may have happened had Ruby not killed him. The trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, produced just later that same, the next year in 1964, and the trial of Lee Harvey Oswald in 1977, and there was also On Trial, Lee Harvey Oswald, produced in 1986. And they have all imagined different versions of this trial. In 1988, a 21-hour unscripted mock trial was held on live television and argued by real lawyers before a real judge with an unscripted testimony from real surviving witnesses to the events surrounding the assassination. About as close to a real case as you could get.
Huh.
The jury returned a verdict of guilty. In 1992, the American Bar Association conducted two mock Oswald trials. The first trial ended in a hung jury, and the second acquitted Oswald.
Interesting.
So it's really hard to tell which way it would go, obviously.
Right.
You can only speculate, you know. But the fact of the matter remains that after a mere 24 hours, the director of the FBI was pushing the story that Oswald acted alone. without any real investigation, without any trial.
Right.
And then, you know, whether or not you believe that he did it, Lee Oswald was robbed of one of the main things that you were, like, guaranteed in this country, mm-hmm. which is the right to a trial by a jury of your peers, right?
Right.
You're innocent until you're proven guilty, and Oswald was never proven guilty.
Right. You know?
And that, my CIA patsies, is the official story of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Ah, the official story. I see. As told by the what?
By the Warren Commission.
I see.
And the CIA.
I see.
And now that we are just shy of 14,000 words into this story,
woo!
Let's get into the conspiracy. We'll see you next week.
Next week, yeah. Yeah, the conspiracy comes next yeah, week, next my friends.
Week, for sure.
Okay. Okay. First of all, Kyle, can I just say, phenomenal work on this outline, my friend. You have done such a good job with this series. I'm obsessed. I'm hooked. Every single time, I learn so much more, and it blows my mind. I think you're doing a really great job, my friend.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Of course. Now, this is what is so hard about this, right? And it's exactly what you said at the end. It is exactly what you said at the end. Lee Oswald never went on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that he got shot 2 days after the assassination is one of the biggest parts of why this is such a conspiracy, right? Mm-hmm. Because we never really got to hear from him in his own words, whether it was public record or whether we got it in a FOIA, you know, decades later, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we never got any sort of his side of the story, right?
Yeah, because, and, like, the Dallas police did interrogate him, didn't report right. it. You know, like...
What the hell?
It's Why? Ridiculous.
Why? Why is so many missteps?
Yeah.
It's like the things that are so important and they did not do, and then they just push this narrative, like you were saying.
And the detective's excuse was literally just like, well, it wasn't like standard procedure to record stuff at the time, so we didn't think to do it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but this dude just shot the president.
You would think. It's a little bit, yeah. It's a little bit more amplified right now.
Norms for that.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Insane to me. And I've been trying to contain it for the last 3 weeks. There is so much. I just told you guys so much bullshit. So much bullshit. You don't even know. I am just such a disinformation agent right now. And I
oh my God.
Hate it. I cannot wait to start off next week talking about Jack Ruby and how that motherfucker was one of the sussiest bacas in this entire goddamn story.
Oh my word. I'm excited to get into that too, my friends. I mean, what a treat it is to get three episodes of groundwork, right? And now that you know everything that is necessary to know about this story, we get to talk about the really, really crazy, really fun stuff.
Yeah, we get this to is the meat of it.
This is absolutely wild. I mean, I just learned so much about this young man, this arrogant, cocky 20-year-old to 25-year-old young man. And I feel like it's changed my feelings just a little bit because, like, I didn't know.
We were talking off camera before the show about where you're at with Lee Oswald right now. And we don't, or where you were at before we just had this discussion. And so I, without giving that context to the listeners, because I don't think they necessarily need it, I'm curious where you're at with Lee Oswald now.
I mean, I find it very interesting. I think one of the most interesting parts that I learned from your outline today was that Lee Harvey Oswald has a history of being erratic and of being violent and, like, assaulting people and hurting people and yada yada, right? I find that to be fascinating. I did not know this about Lee Oswald before we started recording tonight.
I didn't either.
And so I think that that is a significant detail for the reason of, like, and I mean, he's very violent after he allegedly shot JFK, right? He shoots mm-hmm. this dude. He shoots this cop in the mm-hmm. street, like, basically execution style. He shot him mm-hmm. four times,
yeah,
which is...
Yeah, and to clarify the execution style thing, that's kind of been inferred from the ballistics analysis of how the bullets traveled through the body and where they entered and where they exited, right?
Right.
Looking at those angles and things, they kind of determined that he would have had to be at that angle, that close, execution style. We don't know for a fact that's how it happened, but again, the ballistics infer that.
So. And again, like, regardless of whether it was execution style or not, right? Not to say that that isn't important, right? But whether it was or not, Lee Oswald shot this cop four times and mm-hmm. killed him, like, in the street, and then ran away on foot. You know what I mean? He's so erratic, and that's been demonstrated his whole life. I think that's something that's really interesting about this, right? So, yeah. Once again, and I mean, maybe I've said this on air, maybe I haven't yet, but the way that I feel about Lee Oswald is very, it's so hard for me, especially now that I have learned more about him, because there's a huge part of me, without getting into the conspiracy too hard, there's a mm-hmm. huge part of me that definitely thinks that he could have acted alone. There,
yeah.
It is not unfair to say, given this history and given his access to guns and his practice in the Marines and all of his time learning classified shit and then going to Russia and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. It would be disingenuous to say that that is impossible, right? Because yeah. it's not impossible.
I look at the mountain of evidence and I look at all of the people that are like, it's impossible for him to have done this on his own. No, it's not.
It's not.
It's not.
It's not.
It's improbable. It's more likely that he had help, but it's not impossible.
No.
He could have done this.
And, like, he definitely was there.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, we're going to get into it later, but there were bullets fired from the book depository. 1,000%. This happened.
The bullets... Some of the bullets for sure came from the school book depository.
Correct.
Probably.
Correct. Probably. I'm over here and I'm saying that happened. All right.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah,
without getting yeah. too hard into it. But
next week.
But that is exactly what I was gonna say, Kyle, is that it's not impossible. But I do still feel like it is very improbable.
Yeah.
Exactly what you said. And that, I would say, pretty much sums up my back-assward stance on this topic because, I mean, short of sitting here and talking about it for hours and hours, I feel like that's what I've learned, and mm-hmm. I feel like that's significant information to take into the next couple weeks as we discuss the conspiracy around this. I don't want us or the audience to forget that we talked about Lee Harvey Oswald in this way, in this manner, because it mm-hmm. is important to remember who this guy is as we go through the weeds of the next couple weeks. As we get into the conspiracy, remember all of this groundwork. It's very important.
You might be able to say, remember the 5th of November. you thought I was going to get through the whole episode without Stop. Making a reference? Come Stop. On, Arden! Stop. Come on!
I can't
We're
believe
recording
you did
it
this.
On the 5th of November!
I can't believe you did this. I can't believe you did this. That was incredible. I am so jealous. That was amazing. Thank you for that.
I was so nervous I wasn't going to be able to work it in. I was trying the whole episode.
God damn it.
That was my one goal.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect execution, Kyle, I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. It's such a privilege. I love doing this. I love talking about conspiracy. Kyle is doing such a great job. This has been so much fun. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Means a lot.
It really does. You can listen to our previous episodes for more if you are enjoying the show. I would recommend our episode on the Loveland Frogmen.
Ooh, a cryptid episode.
Yeah.
Something I have not thought about in a long time because we're in the weeds with JFK. But
yeah.
That episode was great. A fascinating cryptid, honestly.
Truly. And they're a good, like palate cleanser for when we get these heavy topics, you know?
Yeah, because we did discuss a lot of heavy things tonight, my friends. Like, yeah. It's not exactly a lollipop episode, but if you feel like you need a little refresher, Loveland Frogman, great, great episode to cleanse your palate.
Oh, yeah. You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at @BackassWordKyle. Arden is at @Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. On Twitter, @BackassWordsPod. Instagram, @BackassWordsPod. TikTok, @BackassPod. On Facebook, search the Backass Words Podcast. And you can also find the podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/BackassWords/BackassPod. And if you sign up on the $5 tier, you get an extra weekly bonus episode every single week. So go ahead and sign up.
The Wednesday phenomenon, my friends. It's a
fun
show.
Philanthropic deed.
Yeah. Please come listen. It's fun. We have a good time on the Wednesday phenomenon.
Oh, yeah. I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we'll see you guys next week, unless you get implicated as a patsy in a government conspiracy that you have no idea that you're even involved in, even though they've been setting you up for the last 6 months, including making your best friend a fucking CIA asset. Your best friend is a CIA asset. Don't trust your best friend because they're a CIA asset. They are setting you up. They're setting you up for being a Manchurian candidate. When's the last time you took acid? You don't fucking know. You don't know. You don't know, Arden. You don't. You don't.
I don't.
You don't. They have a heart attack gun, Arden.
And as you're trying to remember the last time that you had LSD, just remember that very much like Lee Oswald, you have a diary, okay? And that diary is full of secrets, okay? That only you know and the diary knows, all right? And your secrets are safe with the diary, just like how you will be safe if you get a diary. Stay safe.
Secrets.
Write down your secrets in your diary.
Make sure that you put them in an uncrackable code. That way your CIA agent can't know your secrets so that you can stay weird.
The danger is real, my friends. The CIA literally exists, okay?
I'm going to be on such a list after this, dude.
Stay safe out there, my friends.
Next week is going to ruin my online footprint, dude.
I know. I want you to know, Kyle, that I will always love you. And not everybody would say that to you right
now. That's
very
true.
I want you to know.
That's very true.
Not people that you know. I don't mean that. I mean people who don't know you. If I walked up to a random person and I said, "Do you love this person?" They would be like, "I don't know who this is." And I would say, "Would you love them no matter what?" And they would be like, I don't know, I guess. And I would be like, I could tell you the correct answer. The answer is yes.
Stop. You're going
to
make
I
me
want,
blush.
I want
on
you
camera
to know.
Now.
I want you to know that I'm that guy.
Welcome to the back.
You're beautiful, wonderful, amazing. The string all across the board doesn't make any sense.
No.
I don't understand.
No.
What do you mean a magic bullet?
Yeah.
You are joking me is what's happening. You're fucking with me is what's happening. You're lying is what's happening. Which I have made my promise to you and I will keep. I don't know why I haven't just been doing it in Comic Sans because I literally don't care. I don't know why
it's
I didn't
fine.
Do that in the fucking first place.
No, reading,
I feel
just
bad.
Reading it is fine. It's when I have to read and speak at the same time that there's like that disconnect and I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. And I guess yeah. I did always put your quotes in Comic Sans.
But... Yeah. So
anyway, it's still not fair.
I
shouldn't have done
you.
It. Yes.
You ableist piece of shit.
I know. I'm apologizing for it's not about me. It's not about me. It's about you. I'm sorry.
Right.